From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, the LDS Church on the issue of medical marijuana. Last month, the church officially joined the effort to oppose the ballot initiative. This is Prop 2, which would legalize cannabis for medical purposes. We'll have three representatives with us to talk about the reason the church got involved. They say church leaders support medical marijuana. They just don't think Prop 2 is the way to do it. We'll be right back.
They say all politics is local, and KUER reporters are here to bring you Utah stories, news that affects you here at home, like public lands and water issues, religion, and the tech boom. You can trust KUER to bring you the facts and thoughtful analysis of why the story matters. Listen to KUER on air at 90.1, stream us at KUER.org, and here's a pro tip. If you've got a smart speaker, tell it you want to listen to NPR, and Alexa or Google will take you right there.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Supporters of the medical marijuana initiative on the ballot in November, Prop 2, were bracing themselves last month when the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints officially got involved in the fight. The church joined a coalition of groups opposed to the initiative, like the Utah Medical Association, the Eagle Forum, the Episcopal Diocese. Before the LDS Church got involved, polls showed something approaching three-quarters of Utahns supported medical marijuana. And after they got involved, that number dropped, about 10 points. It could drop more, but so far it seems to be holding steady. Clearly, church officials are worried, and recently, representatives of the PR department reached out and offered three general authorities to come talk to us about their position on medical marijuana. The church only represents one side of this contentious issue, but they are the most influential and powerful player. And there are a lot of questions we wanted to ask. Why are they concerned? Why did they get involved? Why speak out here and not in other states when the issue was being debated? Do they see a difference between cannabis and any other potentially powerful drug used to ease pain or treat symptoms of disease? And of course, how do they handle faithful members who use medical marijuana or support the ballot initiative? So we took them up on the offer. Today in the program, a conversation with three LDS general authorities. And I'll just say before we begin, today is just one part of our coverage on this issue. We have reached out to supporters of Prop 2 to join us, and they will next week. They, of course, have come to some very different conclusions. We have with us Elder Craig C. Christensen. He's a general authority that's a member of the church's Quorum of the 70 and president of the Utah area. Previously served as president of the Mexico South area. And Elder Christensen, welcome to you. Thanks for being
here. Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
We also have with us Sister Lisa L. Harkness. She is first counselor in the primary general presidency. She's been stake young women president and ward relief society president. And Sister Harkness, welcome to you.
Thank you.
We also have with us Elder Jack N. Gerard. He's a general authority in the Quorum of the 70, has served in a number of church callings, is an Area 70, a stake president, also as a bishop. And Elder Gerard, welcome to you.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's good to be with you today.
Can we get the name thing out of the way here first? Because I know this is, we're all still trying to feel our way and exactly how we refer to the church. And I just want to give you a sense of where we've come down on all of that. So I'm not sure how much that'll come into play, but I don't want you to feel awkward, even though we might from time to time. We want to be respectful of the ideas expressed in the statement from President Nelson. We do intend, of course, to be mindful of it, but in the interest of clarity and impartiality and consistency and economy, we at KUER are staying with our current style guide in relation to the church, which is whenever possible, we use the full name of the church in first reference. But we probably will still be using the terms LDS and Mormon and Mormonism. Just wanted to get that out of the way. I want to begin with, actually, Elder Christensen, you said something before we went on the air that I wanted to ask you about. You said, a reminder, we're ecclesiasts.
That's correct.
What do you mean? There's a distinction between, in terms of your presence here and what you have to say, make the distinction for me between an ecclesiast and someone in the public affairs department, for example.
We are all volunteers called We work on a church service basis, meaning we're here as volunteers. We're general officers for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, meaning that we sit in council with senior leaderships and make ecclesiastical decisions. We do work in specific assignments. Mine is the Utah area, meaning all of the membership in Utah through a process reports up to me. These others have other assignments, but we're not necessarily experts in public affairs or in the issues. We're not attorneys weighing in on rights. We have counseled, listened to all of the staff, all of the input, and then make ecclesiastical decisions accordingly.
Okay. Fair enough.
Doug, could I just add to that?
Of course.
As Elder Christensen said, I think the other thing that's important as it relates to the issue we're talking about today, our focus is on the interest of individuals, knowing that we're all children of a loving Heavenly Father. And so you'll hear us as we talk about these issues, like Proposition 2, our primary focus is to relieve human pain and suffering, to help those individuals who struggle while here in this life, to make sure they have a good quality of life. And that's really our interest in the broader Proposition 2 discussion.
Good, good.
Yeah, we are a church.
A big one, an institution that has a profound influence over the state, which leads me to this first part. In the past, the church has said that it only gets involved in an issue when there's a moral issue at stake. In fact, here's the church's neutrality policy. It says, the church reserves the right as an institution to address in a nonpartisan way issues it believes have significant community or moral consequences. How is this a moral issue? And do you see it that way? Because the question is, why did the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints decide to get involved in this?
Well, it says moral and community issues.
Yeah.
And this does affect our community. We're a global church. We're a global organization. And yet we're part of this community. I represent over 1 million children worldwide, and yet a large portion of our children are in our communities. They're in your backyard. They're in our backyards. So this has to do with our community and our children. We're involved in it really for two reasons. One is to help those children and young people who are suffering from very difficult and significant medical challenges and conditions. And then two, also to protect those same children from unintended consequences of this proposition.
What's the moral component here? You mentioned the community component. What's the moral component, if there is one, for the church's involvement in this opposition to Proposition 2?
Well, if you look at society generally, Doug, and we look more specifically at Utah, as you mentioned earlier, the church normally doesn't get involved in some of these local issues. But if you look at it more holistically, to Sister Harkness's point, this is about individuals and their ability to exercise, as a fundamental doctrine of our faith, their moral agency, to make choices, to reflect on decisions in life that impact how they live, and ultimately, consistent with our doctrine, to return to their Heavenly Father's presence. So I would suggest there's a component, not only the community side, as Sister Harkness points out, but the moral issues that fundamentally impact our society, the community in which we live, and to allow people through that opportunity or exercise in their moral agency to make good choices. Issues
but
like—
Elder, explain, but how does that work when, in fact, you're opposing a proposal that some would contend does provide comfort to young people, to others, Latter-day Saints, non-Latter-day Saints? It's actually providing, some would say, a barrier to access to medicine that might, in fact, solve some medical problems.
I think you bring a very important distinction that we want to make clear, that people understand the position of the church. We support the medicinal use of marijuana as long as it has appropriate safeguards. Proposition 2 goes well beyond those appropriate safeguards. And that's why we're engaged in this conversation. We invite all people. In fact, we've encouraged the leaders of the state to come together to find the appropriate solution. Our empathy, our hearts go out to those same individuals you've just identified. We should all be in this together as a community, figuring out a way to address the issues of those children, of those individuals that suffer from chronic pain. And our purpose is to really assist in alleviating that human pain and suffering. And that's why it all comes together, and that's why we become engaged in this cause.
Yeah, likely the piece that was not well understood, or still is not well understood, is the church's motive of being involved is the same as those that might have a good motive for promoting this. We just think the current proposition goes way too far, and we want to protect as well as alleviate pain and suffering.
So you're saying the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, under the right conditions, would be supportive of a medicinal marijuana?
That is correct.
That's correct.
There's this story told by the reporter Jennifer Dobner of the Cromar family. David and his wife Mandy, they're active Latter-day Saints. They have a 10-year-old son named Holden who suffers from this really rare form of epilepsy. And medical marijuana has helped him. Mm-hmm. So they moved from Utah, where they were, to Colorado for a time. But they had to come back to Utah for all kinds of reasons. They like it here. And I suspect they're really struggling with these questions. They want to be devoted. They want to be devout. But they're in a state now where this is a problem because they can't get comfort for their son, Holden. As ecclesiasts, Elder Christensen, work me through that. What do you say to the Cromar family?
Well, our focus is to help them. Our focus is to work as a coalition. That's why this coalition's broad. We joined a broad coalition in a quite urgent way this year, find a solution to provide relief to those that truly need relief and at the same time protect. And once again, if people would actually get into the 28 pages of the proposed proposition and read the details and understand some of the details, they would likely reach a conclusion that this is far beyond medical marijuana. And we're trying to keep it very focused on those that really do need the help.
Can I just add here, too, we understand the urgency that parents and caregivers are feeling when they have a child or a family member that's suffering from something really difficult, like the Cromar family. All of us that have had children, a sick child, understand how when that child is in pain, you want anything to help relieve that child. And that's why we support the medical use of marijuana, medicinal cannabis, to help relieve these type of things for children and for other patients that suffer from pain and suffering this way.
There have been medical marijuana proposals debated and voted on for a number of years now in other states. Over the last few years, in all of those states, and most of them, I would say, there are significant populations of LDS Church members. Why did you not get involved in those other measures? Why not speak out then?
Well, I think here in the state of Utah now, as was mentioned earlier, it's the headquarters of the church. We have a broad-based community of saints here, and obviously we can't engage in every issue that comes up around the country. But here specifically, particularly when you look at Proposition 2, for all the reasons that have already been articulated, this goes way too far. And as you look at it, I think there's a general perception out there.
But that presumes that the other initiatives didn't go too far. That presumes that the church was okay with some of those other initiatives. Can you even say that?
Well, in the broader context, though, Doug, I think it's important that we come back and we look at it in the context of Utah, as we have been here, and know that this is where our headquarters are based. We have a broad-based community here. And looking at the general perceptions around Proposition 2, it's important to engage in the educational process. As Elder Christensen points out, there's a broad coalition that's come together that we've joined to be part of. It's got the medical experts in it. It's got the PTA in it. It's got the business community in it. It's got other ecclesiastical leaders from other diverse faiths in it. I think that's what is the difference now in Utah. While this issue's been being discussed, there's now, if you will, the uprising of a broad, diverse group that says we want action, but we want it focused on the medicinal uses of marijuana and not the potential adverse consequences that have been talked about here, which is what Proposition 2 stands for.
But why focus on Utah? I mean, I guess it's obvious. This is mm-hmm. your headquarters.
Well, there's another side of that, and that is Utah can lead this discussion.
Is that part of the conversation?
We can do what needs to be done here. And that's why we think this is a place where those things can be discussed and the right legislation, if you will, be passed so it becomes a model as well, not a follower, it becomes a leader in that discussion.
And we're committed to work with this coalition and also with our elected officials, because we understand the urgency that parents and caregivers are feeling to care for these people, those patients and those loved ones they have that are dealing with very difficult issues. So we're committed to working with this coalition and the elected officials to find a quick and appropriate remedy for this.
How committed? How much? I don't know if you want to get into numbers, but I may as well ask it. How much money are you willing to spend? How much money have you spent so far on this effort, and do you plan on spending more?
Well, Doug, I think the very fact that the church is engaged on this conversation shows commitment.
Mm-hmm.
We have the ability to reach out to not only the members of our faith, but we think this is a broader issue. This is a community issue, one that, as Elder Christensen pointed out, we can all come together on. That's why when you mentioned the family, little Holden, who has this issue, we invite all those people to come to that same table. That's what we've got to do, is overcome whatever polarization may be there and bring us all together. How do we fundamentally address those issues of human pain and suffering? As we continue to learn more through science, through medical research, where we bring the experts in, how do we bring it together? So the very fact I think the church has entered in the conversation is a sign of how committed we are. And from our perspective, the commitment goes primarily to education. We believe when people understand that Proposition 2 clearly does go too far, that it has no limits on what people can possess in their homes, that it allows for dispensaries or what some call pot shops within 300 feet of residential areas and 600 feet of schools, we believe most Utahns will say, no, you're right. Proposition 2 goes too far. To Sister Harkness's point, the issue really becomes then, what's the answer? What's the solution? We've called on the leadership of the state and others to step in with urgency and to address this fundamental question so we can deal with the challenges that Holden and other specific circumstances have raised.
Let me ask you this. Is the use of marijuana against the church's dietary prohibition the word of wisdom?
So the word of wisdom does not mention marijuana per se.
Right.
It does raise caution about addictive or harmful substances that would go against our health code. But basically that caution is really a broad caution. In states, we have states around the world that have different laws. Some place this is illegal, some place it's legal. We leave that to local parishioners and their priesthood leaders, given the circumstances.
Well, you do on medical marijuana, but you don't on recreational marijuana.
That's correct.
Well,
let's
start there. The recreational use of marijuana is against the word of wisdom.
That's correct.
Okay. And why?
It would be analogous to tobacco or other, in essence, harmful, addictive substances.
So you see marijuana as effectively harmful or potentially harmful.
If used for recreational purposes, hallucinogens, you know, it would cause and dull your senses. That's basically
how
we would do that.
So I often wonder, is it about the euphoric effect? Or is it the danger of it?
Probably all of the above.
Okay.
I think
mm-hmm.
it all would come into that word. And once again, the title itself, A Word of Wisdom, would be, think through this. Why would you do this? That's mm-hmm. really what's being
but
stated.
I think, Doug, it's also important to remember there's science that raises these issues.
There is.
And there's a lot of science out there now. And as the science continues, as we become better informed as to potential uses of this substance, it's like other medications.
And science, you say, is telling you what about marijuana? That it's addictive?
There's a combination of science. You know, there's lots of research out there that comes up with various conclusions. But fundamentally, there is science that suggests it's not helpful to the human body. Some would suggest in certain applications it can be helpful. And that's the point we're trying to raise. As this science through medicine, through experts, evolves and we learn more about it, we understand today, and thus our focus is on the human pain and suffering component.
What do you
because
say?
There are some experts that believe it can help alleviate some of that. And that's our role as ecclesiastical leaders, is to say our focus is on the benefit of humankind. How do we help assist the Lord's children, particularly the quality of life?
Mm-hmm. How do you react to proponents of Proposition 2 who say this is not a new drug? Folks, this has been around for hundreds, thousands of years, providing, yes, a euphoric effect, but also it has had medicinal effects also throughout the years. What is your reaction to that. This isn't just a new synthetic thing. This is a natural drug that has had a history of having some effect. What's your reaction?
That wouldn't necessarily cause us to embrace. It would be like other items that you know our health code would not allow, because it doesn't necessarily have the health or the wisdom we would want to have to participate in those things. The length that it's been around doesn't necessarily compel us to embrace it for recreational reasons.
Mm-hmm. Is marijuana, does the church consider marijuana any different from other legally prescribed drugs that also have their associated risks along with them?
I think our statement that we made answers that question. We support it if taken in dosage form and in a protected way. We support it if it helps those that are truly suffering and need of help. Doctor prescribed, it goes through the same process as other drugs or aids given to people that are truly suffering.
And just to be clear on that, Doug, as Elder Christensen says, as we stated the general proposition that the church does not object to the medicinal use of marijuana, doctor prescribed, etc., it's also important to recognize from our standpoint we had identified, if you will, the safeguards or parameters in which we should consider it. If other people have other means to impose appropriate safeguards to allow for the medicinal use of marijuana to address some of these fundamental concerns that we're talking about here to benefit humankind, we'd welcome all those ideas. Mm-hmm. We don't suggest to anybody we have a corner on all the best ideas. So our statement's fundamentally to say, let's get together and let's figure this out. Let's rely on the experts, but let's focus on true medicinal use of marijuana and not take that next step, which Proposition 2 does, to go more to a recreational use of the drug.
That's why our statement said, in the spirit of compromise, or in other words, bring the best information. That's why a coalition was formed. Bring the best information. Let's look at the real objective and let's find the right solution.
Mm-hmm. Elder Christensen, in a letter you sent to members of the church, you wrote that Proposition 2, I'll quote you here, creates a serious threat to health and public safety. We've talked a little bit about that. You also mention that the initiative makes marijuana generally available with, quote, few controls. What do you mean by that? What do you mean a threat to health and public safety, and what do you mean by few controls?
Well, I think Elder Girard started some public safety issues,
yeah.
Proximity, distribution, control. Part of that would be things like this would be the only state, as we understand it, that would not limit personal consumption or personal access.
Possession.
Mm-hmm. Other places, there's a limit to that. This does not limit it. Or growing your own. Some of those things that would cause unanticipated but real consequences to public health and safety. From what we're seeing, the teenage, young adult, that younger demographic, every place this becomes readily available, they have consequences, and that makes us concerned. So we're trying to put it back in a place where it's protected and controlled and given to those that are in most need.
So let me add one on that, that I think is very important, and it's within the initiative Proposition 2 itself. Proposition 2 requires that all sales records be destroyed within 60 days of purchase. Now, if we're really interested in medicinal use of marijuana, understanding how it impacts human health, alleviates human pain and suffering, we should not only keep records, but we should allow the experts to study those. In what dosage is it proper to assist with perhaps a young child that may have seizures or an adult that may have chronic pain? That alone should give us a red flag, if you will, or highlight one of the major concerns of Proposition 2 that goes too far. And think of the other aspects of this, the impact on law enforcement. If you have no records, how do you know who's allowed to possess, et cetera? And yet the very proposition requires the destruction of those records within 60 days. We think it's wholly inappropriate. There's a better way, a better solution to do this.
If this is about medicinal marijuana, what's wrong with having a pharmacy 300 feet away from a schoolyard or a church or a residential area?
Well, if the appropriate safeguards are put in place, as we're suggesting, then that's a great discussion point in terms of how we do this appropriately. If it is dispensed through a pharmacy, if it is doctor prescribed and the safeguards are in place, then it's a different function, obviously, than if it's a separate dispensary, a, a pot shop, as I understand some people call it, that's set up primarily for only this purpose within 600 feet of a school or 300 feet of a residential area. So I think, once again, those are community considerations people need to understand. They can make up their own decisions on what that means to them individually, but I'm not sure a lot of people would want those dispensaries or those pot shops within that proximity.
Even if they were only medicinal.
Well, if they're connected to a pharmacy, et cetera, obviously it may be something that most locals would be quite comfortable with.
But
on their own, I think it's a different question for most people.
That's impossible. They cannot be connected to a pharmacy because it's a federal law against it. So that's an impossible request, that these cannot be prescribed because of the federal law. So are you suggesting that that's a major obstacle for you, that until the federal government finally signs off on this, the church will not? Because you've said that it should be prescribed. They should be in pharmacies. But they can't be right now. It's against the federal law. That's not going to happen. So are you saying that you will not support this initiative or this effort until the federal law is
transformed? You make a superb point. Let me read the entire statement that we send out. In the spirit of compromise, and we put the bar high.
Yeah, that's okay. High.
That's high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We understand where the bar is, but we're also willing to look at all other reasonable alternatives that control the distribution for just those seeking medical relief. Mm-hmm. That's really the essence of what we're saying. If that is...
be willing to compromise on
this? Oh, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sure.
Oh, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's an important point, I think. I mean,
it's very significant. Unfortunately, it's been lost a little bit in the conversation.
But you guys keep saying prescribed. It should come from a pharmacy. But if you're willing to compromise, maybe back off on that a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
If your listeners learn nothing more today, Doug, than just that point.
You did the right thing.
Okay, okay.
That's why your show's so popular.
Let us say it again. In the spirit of compromise,
okay,
we want to look at – that's why a coalition is formed with the AMA, with law enforcement, with citizens and patients. We want all those folks to come together and say, this is how this should work.
Go ahead, sister.
Can I add something
please.
Here that we talked about safety in the community,
yes.
And, again, this issue of compromise. In going forward, we would be really quite foolish if we didn't learn from our neighbors who have passed similar type of legislation. We need to learn from their mistakes, learn what works well and what hasn't worked well, what has actually had negative influences and negative impacts on their communities that were unintended. That's what we're asking really our coalition, our elected officials to do. Come together, learn what works and what hasn't worked so that we don't have unintended consequences upon our children and families here in our state.
So there was a rebuttal issued by Libertas. This is one of the proponents of Proposition 2 of the organization. And they've responded to this idea that this allows minors to use medical marijuana, the concerns there. By mentioning that in Colorado, the rate of cannabis consumption among adolescents has not changed since legalization, either in terms of, and this is language provided by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, hasn't changed either in terms of the number of people or the frequency of use among users. How are you responding to that? This is one of those consequences that I know you're worried about. What do you make of that?
Okay, to that same Department of Health there in Colorado also reports that traffic accidents related to marijuana in the 3 years prior to their initiative passing were about at 6.5% or so. The 3 years after that initiative was passed, it went up. It doubled. So there was an adverse effect there on their population
from
marijuana.
To get this on the record, there was a study from Columbia University School of Public Health in New York that looked at whether legalizing medical marijuana had an effect on traffic fatalities. The study's lead author said the findings were unexpected, but he said states that have legalized marijuana have actually seen a decrease in traffic deaths, an 11% average. Decrease. I mean, that's significant.
Well, Doug, I think...
So you're going to have to contend with a lot of other statistics.
Yeah. Well, and this is why it's so important people come to understand the proposition and come to understand the facts around the proposition. We can take creative facts, if you will, or data, and it's real important to look at what the foundation is, when they started, and how you measure that. Because here's the facts, as reported by Colorado, there was a 26% increase in teen usage of marijuana 3 years following their medical marijuana initiative passing. Now, the reason that's so important, you remember in Colorado, they initially started with a medical marijuana initiative and then moved to a recreational marijuana initiative.
And this is the thing you're worried about.
Well, but it's factually important to understand these nuances, because if you got a significant rise and then once we opened it to recreational marijuana, you didn't see much movement, we need to focus on the 26% increase in teen usage. Back to Sister Harkness's point, it's the National Highway Transportation Safety Board, an arm of the federal government, that has done this analysis and has concluded that marijuana-related traffic deaths in Colorado doubled after this was authorized, and their marijuana-related hospitalizations increased 66%. That's a very significant increase. So we need to go back to the sources of the data and probe a little further and say, wait a minute, let's look at the data apples to apples and really bring to the attention of Utahns what the potential adverse consequences are.
Yeah. This is the obvious, but the discussion or the debate on true medical marijuana, we believe we've stated in favor of. We've got to find the right and safe way to address that. There are other consequences. The reason the coalition came together is to study that and bring forward proposals to us. What we'd invite people to do is to read the 28 pages, and you're going to see things that are not medical marijuana related that cause us greater concern than just whether medical marijuana causes what consequences. We expect the experts to help us identify that, but we're in favor of looking for solutions.
That's Elder Craig C. Christensen. He's a member of the Quorum of the 70 and president of the Utah area for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Also with us, Sister Lisa L. Harkness, who is first counselor in the primary general presidency, and Elder Jack N. Gerard, who's a member of the Quorum of the 70. We should point out Radio West and KUER News have been covering the debate about medical marijuana in Utah. We've spoken with journalists and researchers, as well as proponents and opponents to Utah's Proposition 2. We've collected our conversations at radiowest.org if you'd like to take a deeper dive. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
Do you have an old station wagon full of memories and a busted transmission? Yeah, join the club. Give that car, or any car, a new lease on life by donating it to KUER. We'll have it picked up for you, so really it couldn't be easier. Then we split the proceeds with our car donation partner, and the money goes straight into the programming you love to listen to in the car. It's a regular public radio circle of life. Look under the support tab at KUER.org to learn more about car donation.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're hearing from representatives of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints about the issue of medical marijuana. We have with us Elder Craig C. Christensen. He's a member of the Quorum of the 70 and president of the Utah area. We have with us Sister Lisa L. Harkness, the first counselor in the primary general presidency, and Elder Jack N. Gerard. He's a member of the Quorum of the 70. What does a medical marijuana law, what does that look like? Take the Cromar family and Holden. They want to be able to go to a dispensary and get some medical marijuana for their son who's suffering from this terrible, rare form of epilepsy. In a proper format, how do you see that playing out?
Well, first and foremost, from our perspective as ecclesiastical leaders, our primary focus and the first basic principle, how do we relieve or alleviate human pain and suffering? And when we look to that principle, then it helps us, if you will, understand more of the specifics of how you do that. How do we find the Cromar family, little Holden, if you will, and say, what do we know about medicinal use of marijuana today that might assist that young boy, that might assist the individual with chronic pain and suffering? So the broader principles, and it comes back to...
Well, you're saying we don't know that now?
Well, we know some of that now, and that's what I'm trying to say here. Yeah. We need to look at those issues and distinguish that from what some of the other states are now learning has very adverse consequences, like recreational use of marijuana.
Yeah, but where does David and Mandy Cromar go to get this stuff? How does it work? Where should it be situated? Because you have a problem with where it would be situated under the proposal now in the initiative.
Well,
so what does that
look
like?
From our broader perspective, once again, as a matter of principle, and we'd look to the experts in this broad-based coalition. You've got children's groups in here, the PTAs, the medical doctors, the different societies of experts who understand. But to bring us together to help flesh that out, but first and foremost, we've got to have experts help us understand that. That's why in our original statement we said it needs to be doctor prescribed. We need people to rely on that understand those sciences. Then we have to look in the dosage forms, why we raise that issue. We need to make sure it's just not open for any use at any time, but to say, how do we really focus on alleviating human pain and suffering? And then last is through an appropriate dispensary that has some controls, some safeguards, so we don't put at risk the vulnerable in our population, like the youth, like the children. How do we strike that balance? We don't have all the answers, but we're willing to engage in the conversation, to sit with the experts, focused on that primary objective we have to alleviate human pain and suffering, and develop that solution.
I want to make the connection here, if I could, between opioids and marijuana. First of all, why do you think opioid use is so high in a place like Utah?
I wouldn't know that.
I wouldn't know that either.
And I'm not expecting you to provide
it. But it's a problem nationwide.
I don't think anyone knows that necessarily.
It's a problem nationwide.
No, for sure.
Every community is dealing with this problem
Absolutely.
Right now. That's not a Utah.
Well, you know, Doug, there's been a lot of conversation around this, as Sister Harkness points out, nationwide, locally, et cetera. We'd have to go to the experts to really put the finger on what is the primary driver.
Our church leaders concerned about it? Are church leaders concerned about opioid addiction?
Absolutely.
And do you hear that among church leaders as a concern?
Absolutely.
So how do you see the difference, the distinction in these? One is a prescribed drug that is addicting people. Another one is providing comfort and could be an option for it. I want to play you a clip here because I want to get you all to respond to this. Earlier today, our religion reporter Lee Hale profiled a man named Jason Harris. Jason is an active Latter-day Saint. In his 20s, he had this accident and he became addicted to opioids. And he was able, he says, to break free from that addiction. But now he's in his 40s and has significant health issues, and he's terrified of going back to painkillers. And he says marijuana has been a solution for him. Let me play you this moment.
I've never been healthier. I feel like it's been a real solve for me, at least for me. It's been a solve. I'd like to take the guilt away. I won't go back there. I just can't.
How do you respond to members like Jason Harris trying to avoid, which is the bigger problem of addiction, opioid addiction through the use of cannabis? What's the counseling as ecclesiasts that you offer to Brother Harris?
Well, one of the great statements that we're making is in cases, if his is to alleviate pain and suffering, doctor prescribed, we would be in favor of him finding that relief. The connection between marijuana and opioids, we see arguments both ways. We don't know that science. That's why we're calling upon science to do that.
Yeah.
But if we know if the medical profession, the Utah Medical Association and others weigh in and say, here is an alternative, here's a way we can do this, we're embracing those kind of
Do you think marijuana is addictive?
Well,
in the same way as an opioid is?
Let me continue the conversation that Christians have. What we don't want to do in this conversation is to replace one problem or one challenge with another problem or another challenge. Mm-hmm. And that's why, at Elder Christensen's point, we've got to distinguish between the two. We're concerned about opioid addiction. We're concerned about this marijuana proposition. And fundamentally, as a community, we think we can do it better and come up with a better solution. And that's why we're engaged in this conversation. Our hearts go out to the Jasons of the world. That's why we're here. That's why we're focused on this. And that's why we want to be a constructive participant in the outcome.
Can I ask a series of kind of short-ish questions? Because I want to get a sense of how the official church itself is responding to people involved in this issue, both for Proposition 2 and against it. If a member of the LDS Church is actively participating in and supporting this pro-initiative measure, is there standing in the church, their access, for example, to a temple recommend, is that jeopardized in any way?
No.
If an LDS doctor recommends medical marijuana to a patient, is that doctor's standing in the church at all jeopardized?
We've never had the conversation, but I would say no.
Yeah.
If a member of the church votes for the initiative, is that perceived as a lack of obedience or faithfulness, and would that in some way jeopardize their standing in the church?
Not at all. In fact, part of our doctrine is the principle of moral agency. People make choices for themselves. So we encourage people to study it. Our involvement in discussions related to Proposition 2 are to make sure people are fully informed and educated about this proposition. Mm-hmm. And that's why we've engaged in it. We think there is a better solution than what's before the voters this fall, and our hope is that we can have that dialogue.
What do you make of the polls? A poll taken in January by the Salt Lake Tribune and the Hinckley Institute of Politics showed 76% of Utah voters supported legalizing medical marijuana here. Now, when you ask them about recreational marijuana, they're not ready for that. Mm-hmm. But they are ready for medical marijuana here, at least in that percentage.
I think they all understand and see the same problem we're trying to alleviate, and that is pain and suffering and those that really need medical marijuana. That's mm-hmm. that's really where we're aligned with that. What we're suggesting is now get informed. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to raise the bar of information and have everyone, the broader community, look at the actual proposition, look that it goes too far, and then see a light that we can find a better solution where mm-hmm. we can lead. Yeah. And we can show how this works.
It seems like that may be having an effect. The same poll was run in July after the church issued the statement, got involved, and it found that the number had dipped 10 points down to 66%. That number seems to be holding steady. And I'm wondering, what is your reaction to that, to seeing your influence as a church having a pretty discernible influence on these numbers?
Well, I would say it's just people actually learning what's in the proposition. They're learning about the details and also about the consequent lack of safeguards for children and for families. So I think that number may continue actually to go down quite a bit as the election gets closer and people actually read it and study for themselves, talk to their neighbors, talk to their communities. That number may continue to go down as they actually see that there's not the safeguards that are necessary for children and families.
Yeah, our call to action still remains. That is, everyone needs to understand what's in the bill, and I think it will have an effect.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you at all see this as being the church's involvement now is different. It's interesting to hear you say that you're interested in relieving pain and suffering, and it seems like that's your focus rather than saying that you're worried about recreational marijuana. It seems like your focus is, I mean, I know you are, but it seems like that's where you're leading, is the idea of alleviating pain and suffering. That's interesting to hear. And I wonder if this particular issue, your involvement as an institution, is different than efforts in the past. Matthew Burbank, a political scientist at the University of Utah, told Jennifer Dobner, a reporter, that the church's involvement in this medical marijuana issue is different than how the church usually operates in Utah politics. And he said that the church generally, you guys prefer to do your lobbying and your advocacy in a kind of a less public way. But since you've been involved in such a kind of a high-profile way, he seems to say that that's different, that represents a kind of significance. And I wanted to get you to react to that. Is that true? Do you even buy the premise?
Well, I think, Doug, it goes back to the first question you raised today in reading some of the church standard and practices in terms of being involved on issues that impact our community. And this particular issue, as we've talked about, Proposition 2, would have, we believe, very adverse impacts on our community. So when you look at the church's involvement in it, and as I was just hearing you talk, we touch on both sides of this. We are focused on alleviating human pain and suffering. So let's get together and figure out how we do that. But we don't want the adverse consequences of recreational marijuana use. And it's points that have been raised earlier. You just look at some of our sister states and elsewhere. They're suffering from those consequences. Surely we can learn from their experience and step back from our vantage point. Let's get everybody educated. Let's have a robust conversation. And if we're all dealing with the same facts and we can all look at it from that same vantage point, then let's decide as a state, how do we move forward? Utah's got a great history of dealing with challenges, coming together on issues that have been very divisive across this country. We believe this is another one where that model can come into play, where we can sit down with like-minded individuals. I was struck by when you look at the coalition announcement, two of the people that got up and said they were opposing Proposition 2 were two of the initial advocates of Proposition 2. But they have also indicated it goes too far. They're trying to bring it back to what the original intent was, which was to provide for medicinal use of marijuana to alleviate human pain and suffering. So from the church's perspective, we're engaged in a community issue that's very important to all of us. And our hope and expectation is it goes well beyond the church membership. This is an important issue for Utah. We don't want to suffer the adverse consequences that other states have, but yet at the same time, if we can address these fundamental issues so the Jasons of the world, the Holdens of the world, and others can find the relief they need, that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
It's interesting to hear you say earlier that you might be interested in being involved in a conversation of rescheduling cannabis and allowing it to be sold through a pharmacy system to advocate for maybe the federal law change, like that you're flexible. It's interesting to hear you say that. I'm not sure you have this in mind, but do you have any non-starters, areas where you don't want to budge as you look at what you're willing to compromise on and what you're willing not to? Have you thought about that?
Well, we've obviously had a lot of conversations. Generally, as pointed out earlier, we're not medical doctors, so we'll look to the experts to help guide the conversation. But we believe the appropriate role of the church is to help facilitate the conversation. So rather than set out hard positions on one end or the other of the continuum, we'd invite the community to come together. Clearly, these adverse consequences we're talking about are places I don't think anybody wants to go. When you look at traffic fatalities being increased, teenage use going up, I don't think anybody thinks that's a good outcome. So those would be some of those areas where we'd say, surely we can agree that's not what we want. But then without prejudicing the conversation, let's come back to the middle conversation. Let's invite in the Jasons, the Holdens, and others who suffer day in and day out. Help us better understand what we could do in an appropriate way in this state to put the safeguards around it, yet to get back to our primary role as followers of Jesus Christ to act as he would to try to benefit and bless the lives of people.
Go ahead. No, please.
I was going to say the reality or the implementation of what Elder Gerard is saying is clearly we know what we stand for. That's not the debate here. We want to help, and we don't want to prejudice or put parameters around a discussion where others might know much better than we do. We're anxious to participate in those discussions. And I think in a timely way, in a very urgent way, those alternatives will start to surface from the coalition.
And can I add one thing here? Correct. There is perhaps some feeling that by our opposition to Proposition 2 that we want to maybe kick that football down the field and deal with it later. That's not at all true. We're actually very empathetic to the urgent need that parents and caregivers and patients are experiencing. We understand that need, and thus we've joined with this very diverse coalition and are urging our community elected officials and at the state level and community level to get together, work together, and we can find a solution that's better for Utah.
What might not be understood is we're out ministering to those folks all the time. Or in other words, those are the people we're out with, and we understand the pain and suffering.
We do.
The political news website Utah Policy just released a report that said lawmakers are seriously considering holding a special session next month to tweak and fine-tune the two bills regarding medical marijuana that were passed. What's the church's position on those two bills? And according to the article, legislators are thinking about expanding the list of conditions that a person would receive medical cannabis, including, for example, like glaucoma possibly or arthritis. That's one of the things they're thinking of doing, possibly expanding the number of dispensaries. And I'm wondering what you know about these efforts and how the church might be involved in conversations with lawmakers as they, some anyway, try to mitigate what might happen if this initiative passes.
Well, Doug, we haven't seen any details, or we're not sure exactly what they're talking about there.
Okay.
We'd welcome the opportunity to review their discussions. But I think it goes back to the point that's been raised here today on a number of occasions. You can now see, I think, the urgency on the part of those elected officials saying, we've got to address this concern.
And you think that's a good thing?
Well, we think it is a good thing because it serves as reassurance, if you will, to the Jasons, to the Holdens and others who suffer day in and day out and are looking for that relief. I think this broad coalition that's come together with this very diverse group of individuals is a sign to the broader elected officials here in this state that they want action to take place.
And the other part I would add to that, and Utah can lead the way here, or in other words, we can do things perhaps that haven't been done before, and that it's going to take a broad coalition, including lawmakers, to be able to pull that off, to do that.
There's a perception, too, that a vote against Proposition 2 is a vote against medicinal marijuana. That's not true, either. A vote no against that doesn't mean that you're against that usage. It actually means that you want more safeguards in place for the use of medicinal marijuana. So voting no against that doesn't mean that you have no compassion and no empathy for those that suffer. It actually just means you want to protect the whole community as a whole rather than introduce unintended consequences.
That's Sister Lisa L. Harkness, first counselor in the primary general presidency for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We also have with us Elder Craig C. Christensen, a General Authority 70 and president of the Utah area, and Elder Jack N. Gerard, General Authority 70. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I should mention we have reached out to supporters of Proposition 2 to join us next week, and they will. And I'll also say we've been covering this debate for a number of weeks now. We've spoken with journalists and researchers as well as the proponents and opponents to Prop 2, and we've collected those conversations at RadioWest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program directed by Tim Slover, produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.